702.
The upside of failure.
Proof that a setback can lead to a step forward.
Upside of failure time. And we have the phenomenal actress, dancer, choreographer in studio, Makhumalo.
What an intro! Say it again.
People say Makhumalo. Who do you imagine? Because there's so many Makhumalos in this country
you know, one could think of. You know what the problem is? Hi, listeners. How are you? It's Friday. It's weekend. We can smile. It's okay. The weather's being kind to us because, wow, the sun was sunning over these last few days.
Yes.
Listen, I am so impressed with radio voices. Let me tell you, because when we have a conversation, it's just like this. It's easy. We just flow. And then when that red light goes, you're like, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. So on the Oaklands, Johannesburg, I mean, I watched the gent next to me do his
Carabo,
traffic, right?
Yes.
In Tabisa, there's a serious accident on the R21. Then when he's done, he's like, yo, Lusha, you know what?
And it was so trippy for you.
So trippy. But I'm so happy to be here. The last time I came to do an interview at 702 was at your old studio.
Building, yes.
This
do you
is
like
amazing.
Our new home?
Do you have tours for like listeners to come see what this looks like? Because it's incredible.
I don't think so. But we have had some people that we bring through. Exceptional cases. I've seen some young people come and wave
here. I'm gonna initiate like a school tour.
We can talk about it because it's absolutely. And mind you, we have TV studios. You know that, right?
As well.
We're shooting Ready, Steady, Cook here. As well, we have. Listen.
What
did I tell you? We have a swimming pool.
Where?
What?
Fam, where's the swimming pool?
Listen, I'm gonna take you for a
no,
tour.
No, you're not serious.
We have a swimming pool. We have a swimming pool.
Is there a swimming pool?
Yes, there really is a swimming pool.
Yo, guys, do you have availability in position?
Listen, I am so excited to finally have this sit down with you. I mean, I still remember your love interest on Backstage, Clint Brink.
Yes.
What was the character's name?
Well, on Backstage. It was Sean.
Yes.
So we were on Scandal together as well. And then he was Tino. So that was the most recent.
But you guys just are so believable as a couple. I think when I was younger, it's like they have to be together in real life. What do you mean?
I mean, that's TV, right? Right? You got to do it right or not do it at all. I mean, if you can't do what you do with your voice and make it sound so sweet and so creamy, then who's going to listen to you? So it's all appropriate to what skill set you're tapping into, right?
And I remember that there was a time, because you're a Cape Town baby. Where you know,
I've been in Joburg now for, must be like 24 years.
So more of your career has been here than
in Joburg. Yeah, definitely. I left home. I left Cape Town when I was 18 to join my first professional dance company.
Mm.
I think growing up in Cape Town was incredible. I'm a water girl.
Don't you miss it?
I do, but I mean, am I going to stand with my mouth open and eat the sea and the mountain? No, man. Like, this is where work is.
No, listen.
And I love the people here. I do. I love Joburg people. I love integration.
Yes.
Right? I like to not feel like I'm having to fight to just not be looked down upon when I walk into a restaurant. And I feel like
and Cape Town
no disrespect.
Has that.
Shall I say respectfully, I feel like there's still so much of that happening in Cape Town. It's, you know, there's this separation still. I like the freedom of knowing that my mind's liberated and the battles that I do fight with regards to representation and with regards to being a colored woman in my industry, in this country. It's not a battle I'm facing every single day. I don't want to face that battle when I walk into a restaurant and you're looking at me like, can I pay the bill? Yes, I can pay the bill twice.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't want to have that conversation. It's a trigger for me.
And I think I think it's a reality that we are all living and are aware of, that there are parts of this country where you can be quite protected and cushioned from the realities of what other people are experiencing.
Right.
Cape Town is very classist, so certain parts of the population will always be at the bottom and excluded and treated a certain way. And Cape Town is very much becoming Europe at the moment.
I mean, the last colony.
Right, right. But what was it like? What inspired you when you were a young dancer?
Mm.
You know, did you imagine that your career would evolve into presenting as well, into acting? Did you, or for you, was it always my body is the art?
So, I mean, it's a bit of both. I think growing up, you realize, as you get older, you start realizing what the conditions are at home. My mom was essentially a single mom.
Yes.
And there were three of us living with my mom. And I think realizing that I had an opportunity to be really good at dance, I thought, you know, instead of having my mom have to graft for three kids, just let her graft for two, I had this talent, I had the skill set. It was, well, I believe it's a gifting, actually. It's more than talent.
Yeah.
And I was really good at it. And so when I hit a grade, I think it was what we call now is grade 10, I made a decision. I was definitive in the decision that I was going to be a professional dancer and work and be employed and run from Cape Town and find another world that would make sense to me, where I could see my life through a different lens and not just through this Cape colored girl who's talented. Mm. And so I did. I joined Northwest Arts Council Dance Company. That was my first company. I was there for 2 years, the youngest member of the company.
Mm.
That's where I got nominated for an FNB Vita at.
And those were such a big deal, right?
Such a big deal. I mean, sadly now, there are no full-time dance companies, contemporary dance companies in South Africa. You know, we have exceptional dancers who are so great at their craft with nowhere to go.
Mm.
Fortunately,
they don't have like a home, so they're relying on corporate gigs.
You dance in point shoes that make your toes bleed every single day. You're ripping your nails off to do corporate shows that have a place, but they most certainly are not, you know, it's like commercialized music as opposed to classical music.
Mm.
You know, you're training classical music then to do a song that's completely commercialized.
Mm.
There's a little bit of a contradiction there. And so I think fortunately though, and to all artists now, but for dancers specifically, because it's very close to my heart, you know, there's a world you can dance in. There are companies you can get into. There are tapes you can send now. I mean, to have international auditions, we send self-tapes now.
Mm.
So I think, you know, as limited as our country is in supporting the arts, I also think there's an opportunity to access the world, to access what we weren't able to access back in the day. And I think that's how we need to start viewing our opportunities as artists.
Was it a dream come true to, you know, Backstage was based on a art school? You know, was it like, oh my gosh, right place, right time, this is genius?
Right. I mean, you know, I only got chosen for Backstage because of my dancing, and then they saw an acting potential in me. They auditioned dancers throughout the country. I think what was interesting about that is that at the time I didn't realize it, but I was literally learning to act on national television.
On the job.
I mean, at 6:30, there I am in acting class, you know?
Yeah.
Which is interesting because I think the older we get, we overthink so much and we're so afraid to make mistakes. We're so afraid to, you know, get it wrong. There is no wrong, you know? For me, it's like, this is called the upside of failure. I don't believe in failure.
Yeah.
I'd love to rephrase that, reterm that into who defines what failure is to begin with, you know?
Mm.
So if I had some sloppy scenes on screen, well, that's what it is. I took the chance. I jumped to me. That's commendable. And I really just measure my success according to what I feel was in line with my higher self.
Mm.
I feel like awards and I feel like the acknowledgements are incredible, but I've seen people win. And it's not a victory. I don't ever want to have wins in my life where it's not victorious. I don't want a win to ever be a relief for me. It mustn't be like, oh, thank goodness I got it and not that person. No, I don't function like that, you know?
Mm.
So for me, there is no such thing as failure. I feel like when you've stepped into something and you've decided to take the leap, as much as you know there is at risk, the courage to even pursue it for me is half the win. You know, and then the learning and the evolution that comes from that experience, how can that not have value?
Mm.
It is the most invaluable tool. I believe in evolution. And so if it means it comes with a little bit of, you know, a little bit of punches, it's okay. It's wrong with it.
I love how you said sloppy scenes. When we come back, we're going to chat a little bit more with Losha Cooper, a.k.a. I've decided to call her Makumalo on the upside of failure.
702.
The upside of failure.
Proof that a setback can lead to a step forward.
21 minutes after 2 o'clock, it's the upside of failure today with dancer, choreographer, actress, presenter, and performer Losha Cooper. Kumalo, you announced recently that you are a Kumalo officially.
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 When I received my SAFTA in 2019, I'm like, oh, and by the way, I'm Kumalo now.
Right?
Yeah, that was cool. I think that was like the highlight moment for me. I always say this, of receiving that award. Was having my kids on stage with me.
I remember that award.
Experience that win literally from my POV. They saw people clapping, screaming, standing, applauding, just like in.
Wait, 2019 was in Sun City.
Yeah, yeah.
I interviewed you on the red carpet.
Did you?
I'm only remembering now when you say you were with your daughters. I was like, I remember being there.
That's so
You're
crazy.
With your daughters on the red carpet.
And I was so close to not doing the red carpet.
What?
Because I'm not a red carpet person, really. I know people look at us in the entertainment industry, right? And we're like, yeah, everyone loves the frills. Everyone loves the glitter.
No, it's exhausting.
I'm just like, I mean, maybe old school a little bit, but I like to work and allow my work to speak for my worth, you know, and what I have to offer. I've kind of had to, even with the social media stuff, kind of had to make peace that that's the way the world's moving. And, you know, if I stayed stuck on a landline, I wouldn't have a cell phone, right? Mm. So if I stay stuck on, oh, yeah, my work must speak for itself, I'm still on the landline. So it's just about embracing evolution and kind of growth in all areas and making it work according to what is true and is filled with integrity for you. Because it's very difficult to, you know, to balance this hype that you're buying to and then also into who you truly are.
And I'm thinking, you know, that's the part of the work that people don't see is work. Like, you know, sometimes you don't feel like sitting in a makeup chair for 2 hours, getting into a dress that isn't comfortable to sit in, walking a red carpet, you know, going into this ceremony, you kind of want it to be over and done with.
Right.
What then are the challenges in the industry that you have struggled to deal with that are part and parcel of the package, which, you know, there are so many that are, I think, are quite universal.
Right.
I don't know many people who are like, I love fame.
I think there are people who are able to navigate fame a whole lot better than others. I think it's something that they've 100% onboarded as business. And I think that's incredible. And then I think there are people perhaps like me who sometimes struggle between, you know, what's real, what's authentic, and what's for the industry. I would hate to lose myself for an income. I would hate to lose myself in a moment because I thought that that's what would be palatable. I don't resonate with that at all. So I'm selective about, one, what type of work I do, two, what kind of events I go to, and three, how I, you know, present myself in the world. And I always try and keep it as authentic and as true to myself as I possibly can. Walking a red carpet, unfortunately, is the furthest from the truth. But I go, well, how do you enjoy this?
And how do you make it fun?
How do I make this work for me? Who is Losha in this space? You know? And I must say at the SAFTAs, if I wasn't with my kids, I was going to walk straight to my chair because there was a lot of fuss around being nominated.
Does it give you anxiety?
I don't know if it gives me anxiety. I sometimes, to be honest, find it frivolous. I find my work is important, but I also have to understand that engaging in other ways is as important, and that's okay, right? And I also think, you know, I think that the fact that you hold this kind of space on your show, you know, what happens after failure. I remember a time in my life just before I started backstage, not before I started lockdown, actually. I had not worked. I had not been on screen for 3.5 years, right? I finished on Scandal. I went and worked behind the scenes, but literally booking a job was just so difficult, right? Partly because there were no roles written for colored people.
I was about to say, this is the part that people maybe don't know.
Yeah.
In South Africa, we're unique, and it doesn't happen often around the world.
Yeah.
But blind casting is not a common thing like what they did with Grey's Anatomy.
Right.
Where they write characters, but they don't say, we're looking for a black female who is Xhosa speaking. So if they don't say colored.
Yes.
Then you're not going to send the brief.
So the other day, I heard very interestingly, I auditioned for something. Obviously, it was a black name. I didn't get the part because I wasn't black, but the performance was incredible. I was told this, right? And yes, I completely understand that with regards to representation. But I also feel like it does become so particular that you perhaps you'll lose out on someone who would have been a brilliant craftsman for the role because you're having to do what is demographically correct. I understand this too, right? But as an artist, it is very difficult to navigate.
Because it isn't just the demographically correct. So for everyone who is listening, for example, if you have a story set in Limpopo, and there are ways you can navigate. So let's say a director really loves
shows,
you.
That's not all shows. That's not across the board.
No, not across the board. So let's use the example to say, let's say there is a story written in Limpopo, right? And
or like
the key, yes. So Shaka is a very good example.
Yes.
If you're not pure Zulu speaking,
yes,
you're not going to be able to be in the film. Why? Because you have to work for what the story is.
Right.
So even for myself, there's so many character parts I couldn't get. Why? Because I'm not Zulu speaking. Or there's parts I wouldn't get because I'm just not dark skinned enough to be a part of a tribe in whatever the case may be. But I think, which is slowly directors and producers are getting into the space where if they are like, I loved her so much. I know we said the daughter must be black because the siblings are black. Let's make her adopted. So there are creative things that people can do, or they write a different character for
you. I totally agree with that. Yeah. On Housekeepers, I played Nkonto. No one flinched. I love that. I'm a boundary breaker. I don't believe in limitations.
Yes.
I don't believe I'm boxed into this little thing.
Because there are colored people who were raised fully
now
black.
Now on Red Ink, on Showmax, I'm playing Detective Morapedi. I'm Losha Khumalo, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So I think what the point was I was trying to get to is that sometimes you'll sit with no work, right? Because there's just no work for you at that time. And I really wanted to tie it into this platform that you host here. You know, I learned an important lesson during that time. Sometimes God starves your stomach to feed your soul, right? If you're consistently fed and comfortable, there's nothing more to look for. So in that period of 3.5 years before I got onto lockdown and consequently won an award and really felt good about the work that I did, I had not been on screen for 3.5 years. Mm. God directly starved my stomach to feed my soul.
Mm.
I found so many other things about myself, my capabilities, what else I have capacity for, you know? And I think the spaces that I occupy now, I think people know 10% of what I do, which is the artistic side. I've moved into the space of alternative healing, you know? I'm a qualified yoga instructor. I'm a qualified kiddies yoga instructor. I am hosting a mini retreat on the 1st of April with a sister of mine, Alexa, who is, she holds space for cacao medicine, which is a heart opener medicine. I'm going to post the details on my Instagram page, and I do movement medicine. So we're combining the two, you know, mediums, and we're creating a space where people can come and connect to themselves and let go of what no longer serves them and onboard what does and find a more beautiful way, a more loving, gracious way to navigate this journey that is life as a human.
So many questions are coming through on the WhatsApp line, 0727021702. We continue with Losha Khumalo. It's 2:30.
702.
The Upside of Failure.
Proof that a setback can lead to a step forward.
The Upside of Failure with Losha Khumalo, who earlier was so fascinated about how we change our voices to be on air, right?
Yeah, totally.
So I'm keeping Karabo here. Where's that script, Karabo?
Yeah, we're doing a scene.
Right,
yeah.
we're doing, because Losha knows how to read scripts, and we are taking your calls. I see your questions coming through. 011-883-0702 and the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702. So if I were a traffic person, this is my normal, is this confirmed that this is my normal talking voice? Let's confirm, Karabo.
But no, I want to do this scene with Karabo, though.
Wait, it's coming. So if I were to change, I'll say, in Midrand, there's an accident scene on the N1 South near Olifantsfontein Road, causing more than a 30-minute delay from Sanrand. But I want to say, in 4 ways, you expect delays on Winnie Mandela Drive. You, Witkoppen and the N1. It's your turn.
Right. We know, right? Ooh, are we ready?
Okay.
Yay.
So it's your turn. Let's hear your traffic voice.
You know my problem is, right?
Yeah.
As I read, I have an opinion. Right? So as I read, my brain doesn't filter like, yo, you can't comment on this.
Yes.
Let's just take a step back. Let's relax. Okay.
I trust you. Okay.
The sweat.
This is an audition. You said you wanted to swim in our swimming pool. Come.
Yo, I'm working on my body at gym for that swimming pool, guys. Whether you can read news or not doesn't qualify you to be a bikini hour. Mm-hmm. Do I say in the traffic?
Yes.
Okay. In the traffic. In Midrand, there's an accident scene on the N1 South near Olifantsfontein Road, causing more than a 30-minute delay from Samrand, but it's so monotone. In 4 ways, expect delays on Winnie Mandela Drive between Witkoppen and the N1. And tomorrow, I'm going to teach, and then I will also go and eat lunch. And you know what, guys? My opinion on the state of affairs in our country is very, very sad. And then you see how this thing just, like, you just speak the same. And so when we're fighting, Karabo, so if you want to calm it down, then you go into this voice.
Yes,
so let's pretend. You know what? I'm so tired of you doing this to me. I'm ready. I've had enough. Every Friday, you want to come home at 10 o'clock.
Whoa, Cooper. You know, at the moment, you are very angry. And it's not good. So please, calm down. Because you're going to just lose it.
You know what? I just pack your things. Pack your things and go, please. I can't deal with this. It's enough now. It's enough.
I really think you are being extreme right now. So please calm down. Sit down. I'll bring you a glass of water so that we can talk.
Now we're
going to
show you Karabo's real voice.
Then you will say, and there's been delays in my response to you.
Yes.
I'll be delayed by 30 minutes in coming home.
Let's do Karabo's real voice now. Now let's show people your real voice because that's the exercise here, right?
Okay.
Listeners need to know how hard you work, guys.
This is his real voice.
So go, Who are you talking to?
I am here. Just wait a minute. You see now.
No. Listen here.
No,
listen.
Don't do that, Chief. Chief.
We're sitting in a restaurant. I'm sitting by myself at dinner. You said you're going to the toilet.
Yeah.
You take your phone. Come on. Why are you taking your phone to the toilet?
You and Losha are starting the very first 702 radio drama. Big round of applause to Karabo. Losha, I think you get the job.
And also when I walked in, he's like, yo, your style. I was like, hey, he's won my heart.
But you know which one is actually hard? Because I had to be a newsreader for a year.
Yeah.
But because I realized, don't sight read, because I do the sight reading thing, but the one where you get to, somebody's been arrested for multiple counts of rape, I want to be like,
yo,
in my area. You know, so that thing of being opinionated. Mm. But I'm wondering, because some wonderful messages have been coming through and comments. One says, you are with my twinny there, Losha. We share the same birthday on the 9th of November.
What
a remarkable, talented, and intelligent woman. I love her stacks. Jabi from Lanesia South. Another one says, 702 and Losha, thanks for the interview and inspiration. When Losha shot a dance clip for Cartoon Network, I think it was 2009.
Yeah.
I was the proud parent with a camera who accompanied the two youngsters who danced with her. It took the whole day to record those few minutes of clips. It is hard work. That's from Dr. Philemon Mahuma.
Wow.
You look in shock.
I was the host on Cartoon Network Dance Club. Yeah. It was an amazing experience. I love working with kids, right? Because I just feel kids have this unique way of seeing the world. And more so now, obviously having a 16 and an 18-year-old, more so now I realize how much they're plugged in, and that if we spent more time listening rather than speaking at our kids, man, there's so much we can learn from them. They are plugged in. So that was such a cool memory. Thank you so much for that.
Another one says, from Wako, who says, it has been a while. She was a woman of my dreams. She is so strong like Zena. Shem, she's a Kumalo now. So you might have to send buffaloes to overthrow the cows. I'm wondering, when you spoke now about kids, how has motherhood changed your artistry?
I think motherhood changes you overall. But I think my most important learning as a mother is what kind of child I am to my parents. That was the thing that shifted me the most. Because as a parent, I then realized that the only thing I really wanted my kids to, I didn't want my kids to see me as a hero, as someone who didn't make mistakes, as I really wanted my kids to see me as human, so that they could be human, so that their expectations wouldn't be, one, so unrealistic for themselves because of the example I set. So more, I think what my kids brought to me was the understanding that forgiveness of my own parents, graciousness with my own parents, understanding that they're human too. You know, that mirror that they brought for me to look at, well, how am I navigating and how am I resolving and restoring, you know, my relationships with my parents.
You're hitting bars here in the sense that when the realization happens that because you're there now, realizing you don't know what you're doing, just as you think you figured this little person out, they grow.
Yeah.
And that realization of my parents, not just understanding it theoretically, but living the experience of these people did the best they could.
Yeah.
And they were without internet, YouTube videos, TikTok accounts saying, here are the hacks. They used their intuitions. They used what they saw. Those that were single moms, when you think about how little they were earning, what they stretched to survive on.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, has the depth of your emotions really expanded where you even think you're a better actor?
Definitely. I think in informing your ability as an artist, in any case, experience always informs how you portray something and how you offer it, right? And the layers that you unpack to be able to make that offering and deliver it the way that is true to you. I do believe that, you know, there's a part of me that at some point had to let go of shame. Now, when we talk about shame, we're always talking it from the perspective, we're talking about it from the perspective of like, oh yeah, I go to therapy, my therapist and I talk, and then I release it and I carry on. There is a physical release that needs to happen, right? There's a spiritual release that needs to happen. We do work on multi-layers. We don't do work in just in one format. There's not just one part to this. I do think, though, that for me and my experience, the thing that's really brought me out of the condemnation I placed under myself was how I view my creator now. I don't believe my God to be angry and who's going to punish me. Because that's not how I treat my kids. I don't want to punish my kids. I discipline them because that is what's necessary. But I still do it from a place of absolute love. I don't believe in this vengeful God who's... No, it's loving. If I don't even understand the full capacity of love, and my creator is love, I am nothing in comparison. So if I am loving my kids all consumingly like this, how much more am I not loved by the source of love itself? So for me, that's a big thing. How is my relationship with my creator? You know, I'm not using the word God specifically because there are many people who listen to 702 that come from different sects. And so I'm saying creator because that's a universal word. But what is my relationship with my creator? How do I tap into it? What enhances that relationship? What makes that relationship where I'm not just talking about how I am interacting with the world as a spiritual person, but how are my actions showing that? What kind of space do I hold where people feel impacted by who I am and how I reflect my creator? You know, for me, it's very simple. I think we look at life and we go, yeah, if you pray this many times, if you do this, if you do that, that's all part of. But who are you when you're interacting with someone? Who are we when someone at the till, you can see that they're not well that day? Have we stopped and said, hey, how are you? Mm. You okay? We talk about building legacy, but we're building buildings, right? For this legacy. What legacy am I leaving? This is very important to me. What legacy am I leaving with every single person I'm impacting? If I die tomorrow, right? And I should go before my mom. What are people saying? What are people saying to her?
And I think it goes almost back to what you said at the beginning about the fact that our industry, there are things that are part and parcel of the job. But for you, when you say you want the work to speak for itself, you want it to be meaningful.
Right.
You want it to move people. You know, when I think about your character when you were on the S3 show that just went out of my head now.
The estate.
How could I forget?
Yeah, it's okay.
The estate, yes.
Yeah.
And how you had to explore so many different themes within your character. You always want to walk. Yes, it's nice to have the award.
Yes
it's nice to have the accolade. Yes, it's nice knowing there's money coming in the bank. But when that one person comes to you and says, Losha, when I saw this scene, you saved my life.
Right. That's it.
That's all of it.
Yeah.
There's some of your voice notes that are coming through. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, 0727021702, more of your questions and comments.